Om Jnanadhimadannasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah.
O Venerable Vaishnav Thakur, O Ocean of Mercy, be merciful to this servant of yours and purify me with the shade of your lotus feet. Your lotus feet I humbly hold. By helping me control the six urges and purifying me of the six faults, bestow upon your servant the six good qualities. O Master, please give me the six kinds of holy association. I have sat down here hoping to have your company. Alone I do not find the strength to chant the holy name of Hari. Please be merciful and, blessing me with a drop of faith, bestow on me the great treasure of the holy name of Krishna. Krishna is yours and you can give him to me, for such is your power. This wretch is simply running behind you, crying out, Krishna, Krishna. O hey, Vaishnava Thakur. Doyara Sagara, O ocean of mercy. E dase karunakori. Please be merciful to your servant. Diya Padachaya, giving the shade of your lotus feet. Shodo hey amaya. O purify me. Tomara Charana, your feet, Dhori, I humbly hold.
Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Maharaj, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings this song, he is one of the most advanced devotees. He certainly must have a taste for the holy name. And yet, when he sings the song, it sounds like something a neophyte would sing, you know, somebody who has no flavor, no taste, and who's struggling to find, you know, the strength to do their 16 rounds or just get into the circuit of sadhana. When he says, I'm not getting any taste, I have no hope, he's literally begging for his Guru Maharaj's mercy. What is it we understand from his level, such a great Vaishnava?
Two things. One is that he's setting an example how a neophyte should pray, and he's not a neophyte. But number two, when one is very advanced and is experiencing extreme humility, called dānya, there's a way in which the devotee thinks him or herself utterly and unqualified and feels more and more that, although that person is becoming more and more qualified, there's a taste in that I'm in feeling fallen and feeling unqualified. And that is the taste of helplessness, that one's simply dependent on the Lord. And the more that one actually has taste, the more one prays to the Lord, oh, I wish I had taste. I don't have anything. This is a symptom of a great advanced devotee. So two things are going on at the same time in the songs of the great Thakur Bhaktivinoda. And in his songs in Sharanagati, of which this is one, there are other exhibitions of extreme humility in the six processes of surrender. There is this practice of great humility, and you'll hear him express it in Amara Jivana, in which he's lamenting that I've wasted my life, I have no tastes. When I see others happy, I become unhappy. When I see others unhappy, I become happy. And I always speak lies, even when I don't have to, and so forth. He's only seeing his faults and things. This is extreme humility. So it's a bit of a paradox that those, you know, who are becoming more and more advanced, they feel themselves unqualified. But it doesn't mean they become dysfunctional, and it doesn't mean that they won't do their duty at the highest level and also be attentive to every detail in Krishna's service. But it's a feeling of humility in their heart that's like that. Jal. We have new glasses. So I'd like to try them out. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Nina Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kata Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Sadvatutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindo Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpaturubhascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Gopremanande Haribo. Tonight we're speaking about the art of cooperation. And the word cooperation means to work together, to cooperate. And because it's not an easy thing to do, it's highly valued in this world. We see that if someone's able to cooperate with others, he or she can get ahead in many different aspects of his or her life. Because every living entity is unique and individual. We have a sound chamber set up over here. A lot of sounds coming in. Once Srila Prabhupada wrote a letter to one of the leaders of ISKCON who had been a little bit disgruntled because he saw that some of the other leaders were not cooperating with one another and were arguing vehemently about various points and about management issues and so many other things. And he said, Srila Prabhupada, how can this happen in a spiritual movement that people disagree with one another so vehemently and even argue and so forth? And, you know, isn't this a sign of weakness? And very interesting reply from Srila Prabhupada in that he said, this is not, this is natural in that every living entity is unique and individual, and therefore we have our own ways of doing things. And therefore there will be some discord and disagreement because we're individuals. And the idea that this leader had that there should just be complete harmony and no friction or discord whatsoever, Prabhupada said, was a utopian idea. That means doesn't exist. It's a dreamed of state. And he also said that it's impersonal. And if one conceives of merging into nothingness and not being a person, then maybe there's some idea of no friction. But in that, there's no taste. So one thing in the art of cooperation is to adjust one's expectations. Because if I'm expecting that I'll find in every stage or through my own expertise or because of my own willingness to cooperate that everyone else will cooperate with me, or if I think that within our spiritual organization there will be no discord or no differences of opinion, then we'll be disappointed. And this kind of disappointment leads to a lack of energy in one's service. So if you're fortified ahead of time and you expect that as I move forward with my services, I will encounter discord and there will be differences of opinion, then I won't be disappointed. And the next point is how to actually deal with those rather than giving an ultimatum and giving up. This is one of the fallacies of relationship building and making an ultimatum. For instance, if you're working with somebody and they're doing something that you don't like and you just say, if you did that again, I'll never work with you again. You've painted yourself into a corner. Because now you either have to be a liar or you have to give up your ultimatum or you have to hold to your ultimatum, which is usually not a good idea because time goes by and people change and circumstances change. So better not to paint yourself into a corner, better not to make ultimatums and say never, always. These words are danger words when communicating with others, especially when you're trying to cooperate. Also, it's important not to assume what other people are thinking or why they're doing certain things. Therefore, as we'll find in this art of cooperation, it's very important to communicate and find out exactly what's going on. And in the art of communication, it's important to listen because this is a lost art, listening. Generally, people are thinking while they're talking or while somebody else is talking and overriding what they're saying and their mind's elsewhere. For instance, someone's explaining their position and I'm thinking how I'm going to counter whatever they're saying. It's better and a very useful way of communicating to listen very carefully to what people tell you, even if you don't agree with it, and even write it down if you have to, and then repeat it back to them. And you'll find that many misunderstandings are dissolved even if you just repeat what people say. Oftentimes in counseling, if someone comes in and says, I have all these problems, and you say, okay, tell me what they are. And then you stop at intervals and you say, okay, if I understand you correctly, your dog got run over by a car, you lost all your money, and your wife just ran off. So is that correct? Yes. And then what else? Okay, well, I just found out I have smallpox. I mean, they go on and on. And if you just repeat back to them, you'll find that oftentimes they go, wow, that really helped. You really helped me. Thank you very much. You didn't have to suggest anything. You didn't have to prescribe anything. Prescriptions are, you have to be very careful about that. Stephen Covey makes this point about prescribing. And that is, if you go to the eye doctor and you tell him, I can't see very well. My vision's getting blurry. And he says, well, here, just take my glasses. This is typical of the way people often communicate with others. Someone comes and tells you their problem, and you say, well, here's, same thing happened to me. It's practically the same thing. Here's what I did. Rather than actually listening and considering their particular situation, I offer my prescription according to my situation. So hearing what people have to say, repeating it back to them, considering it very carefully. Also, when it comes to communication of two different ideas, two opposing ideas, don't paint yourself into a corner and say, if you do that, then I'm out, or I'm finished. Because then you either have to be finished or you have to reverse what you just said. So if you learn some of these things, if we learn some of these things, if I learn some of these things, then it becomes a valuable asset anywhere you go because you'll find the same friction in any organization that you go to. As long as there's people, there's friction. This is what Queen Kunti says is called social intercourse. As long as there's social intercourse, there are going to be what we call difficult situations because people are complicated. because they have unique backgrounds, they have unique psyches, and when you mix them all together, there's so many combinations and permutations that practically anything can happen. So we should keep in mind that cooperation for the sake of serving Krishna is very pleasing to Krishna. How do we know this? Well, there's one very important statement given by the by Krishna to the Prachetas, who worked together in their offerings to Lord Krishna. They performed austerities and meditation underwater for how many years? Do you remember how many years they stayed underwater? 10,000 years. 10,000 years underwater, they were performing austerities, and they worked together as a family unit and performed their austerities. And Lord Krishna said, the Supreme Personality of God had said, "My dear sons of the king, I am very much pleased by the friendly relationships among you. All of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. I'm so pleased with your mutual friendship that I wish you all good fortune. Now you may ask a benediction from me." So Prabhupada points out in his purport how valuable is this cooperative spirit. And when devotees work together and cooperate to perform their services, it pleases Krishna very much. And you'll notice in the statement that all of you are engaged in one occupation, devotional service. This is the common point. So cooperation requires finding that common point. And fortunately, when we're working in a devotional community, we have this common point, devotional service. It's important to come back to that and remember what is the most valuable point. And oftentimes, if I don't feel like cooperating, maybe it's because I'm not considering that common point. Real unity is the unity of the individual souls attempting to satisfy the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada's statement, those who remember the Prachetas every morning, every evening, every day will become friendly with their brothers and with all the other living entities. That's from the text. That's not Prabhupada's purport, but it's from 439. Those who remember the Prachetas every evening of every day will become friendly with their brothers and with all other living entities. So this cooperation is based on trust. And trust is something that is also extremely valuable. We know that if you have the trust of someone else, it's something that can't be bought, certainly. And it requires time to develop trust, because consistency over time breeds trust. When you see somebody in many different circumstances come through with their promises, then you develop this invaluable sense that you can trust them. When you know that you can trust somebody, it's very valuable. And that takes time. To see people in winter, spring, fall, summer, through all the seasons, and they always show up, they always do what they say they're going to do, and so forth. And if they make a mistake, they make up for it, and so forth. You develop confidence, you develop trust in that person. So when there's trust, then you don't have to apply so many rules and regulations in order to cooperate. Rules and regulations generally are for people who don't have trust. And you can see that, you know, two roommates living in one room. And if there's trust and there's a feeling of confidentiality between the two of them, that they're looking out for each other, if one is doing something which is disturbing to the other, they can simply work it out and trust that the other one will cooperate. But if not, they'll have to put a sign on the wall and say, "All right, here's the rules. 9 o'clock, lights out, no more radio, whatever it is, no chewing gum and sticking on the floor." You know, whatever the dorm rules are, they have to impose those and they have to write them down and make them clear. But for those who have love and trust and have developed those kinds of appreciation for one another, there's a sense of the other person's way of working and a way to accommodate them. And you don't have to have as many rules and regulations. Prabhupada mentioned several times that the Krishna consciousness movement runs by love and trust, and that these are the most important and valuable feelings that the devotees should have among themselves so that they can cooperate. Love and trust. If you love someone, practically you'll excuse whatever faults they have and you'll do whatever you can for them. And if you trust them, then you don't have to constantly guess whether they're going to do it right or not. You trust that they're doing their due diligence as much as possible. So developing love and trust is also a deliberate act. It's something that in a community, in a family, as long as there's two or more people, there has to be a conscious endeavor to develop this love and trust. And that should be a focal point for anyone who's progressive in human life or in devotional service. Henry Ford, coming together is a beginning, staying together is a process, and working together is success. I mean, how do large corporations go on and groups of people? There has to be this sense of working together. And of course, the famous quote I've given from a previous president of the United States, that it's amazing what you can accomplish if you do not care who gets the credit. This is often a sticking point when it comes to cooperation. Who gets the credit for the activity? And in a spiritual practice, one must be self-effacing or ego-effacing. It means that we're working towards stepping out of the center. Because the false ego will appropriate every circumstance and wave its flag and saying, this was mine, I thought of this. Wait a minute, I thought of that. How come he gets to say, how come I wasn't noticed for that activity? The more I have that tendency and the more I need to have my stamp on that activity, the slower it goes. And the more I'm willing to give others the credit and not mind, unless it's very important to develop the particular project for people to know. And that's another case I'll talk about in a minute. To take one's ego stamp off of whatever we're doing speeds up the project. It lets others move forward with it. We don't have to hold it back. There can be an unconscious way in which I hold back from cooperating with others because first I want to make sure that it's got my stamp on it. Otherwise, I won't let it out of the box. I don't want it to go out to public unless everyone knows it's me that did this. And that stifles cooperation. And living entities are sensitive. And therefore, they appreciate when someone is ego-effacing and is also giving the credit to others or allowing them to take a due credit and not trying to hold back. And that also, counterintuitively, brings more glory, actually, to the person who's empowering others and letting the activity go forward without having to stamp it with one's little ego stamp. There's a little stamp the false ego has, he keeps in his desk. And he has to bring it out every time and say, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine, that's mine. I thought of that. And if you can bypass the little stamp master and let things go for the sake of the service to the Lord, that the Lord's being pleased and he's being taken care of, then one's service can expand quite remarkably. And how to do that? How is that actually possible? There's only one real way that can be done, and that is if I understand that Krishna is the witness, He knows everything that's going on. He knows all the activities, and he can see very minutely who's doing what, who has what motive in the process of cooperation. And if I understand that and I'm working for him, then instead of trying to get external approval, then it's very easy to transfer that need to be noticed, which is always there, to trying to attract the favorable glance of Krishna and say, this is for you. And you already know what's going on anyway, so I don't really have to wave a flag towards you. I'll just do my service. So this fosters an environment of cooperation. That's why it's a very advanced activity, a very advanced state of consciousness, cooperation. Sundar Ananda Prabhu. Here we go. We have a digital mic coming towards you. Trishab's got it. Don't get to try the digital mic.
Yeah, those were very nice points, Prabhu. I just have a question on that. What about external validation from gurus like Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru? Of course, Krishna knows it. Is it all right to expect validation from our senior or superior Vaishnavas for whom many times we do things because we generally don't perceive Krishna's connection directly?
Yeah, it's okay to take. I'm not saying that it's completely taboo to take any kind of external feedback or to present it before someone, but we should make sure it's not being appropriated by the false ego, and that's why we're motivated to do it. And more often than not, more likely than not, if you're dealing with devotees and even ordinary living entities who are not engaged in a spiritual process, become aware of those who are selfless workers. They tend to get noticed, especially by those who are managing, because they're so easy to manage. And, you know, in a corporation, someone who's not always trying to pull the center back to them, but they're willing to do their duty no matter what, will excel. Covey talks about this in his book, Seven Habits, and there's a example he gives of somebody in a corporate circumstance who is not in a significant position, but he goes on doing his duty, even despite the obstacles, and then basically rises to the top because he gets notice. Cream rises to the top because people who are in charge and notice these things. So in spiritual circles, there's a similar way that things work like that. I mean, word always gets out. Madhavendra Puri was a pure devotee. He didn't want to be noticed. But because of the purity of his devotional service, Krishna noticed him. Krishna recognized him. And then the pujari came out to give him his reward because the Lord Gopinath had saved some sweet rice for him. We say stolen. And told the pujari in a dream, go take it to Madhavendra Puri. It's a remarkable, you know, story. And then the pujari went out to the market at night where Madhavendra Puri was staying somewhere, and he was calling out, if anybody named Madhavendra Puri, please come here. Lord Gopinath has stolen this sweet rice for you. And then he came out and he took the sweet rice and he honored the sweet rice. He took the little clay cup and he kept it so he could eat a little bit of that cup, you know, in remembering Gopinath. And then he left quickly because he understood that now the word was going to get out. Pujari would tell somebody, and in that section it's mentioned that fame follows the devotee wherever he or she goes. And it's not because they're trying to put themselves forward. So if you report in a humble way what the facts are and don't try to embellish because somebody who's leading you needs to know, but you're ego effacing and you hold back and you don't present it, that person will know anyway. That person will understand the circumstance. And other people will go, even if you don't say it, other people will say, no, he did it. You know, she's the one who pushed this forward. It'll come back. It always comes out in that way. So being careful of the false ego who always tries to appropriate everything. We should present whatever our case is judiciously before our shiksha or diksha guru. Okay? Any other points before I move on? Yes, Vijesh.
Yes, Prabhuji, in the business world, it works exactly opposite because, you know, you need to, end of the year, you need to do your brag sheet, you know, where you need to highlight your work which is done, and you have to highlight that everything in this whole world, only I did it. So, you know, when we read our own stuff, sometimes we feel like we shouldn't be doing it, but then the instructions are given, you know what, you need to really put yourself in the center and show that you are the one who did it. So if you remain totally humble, I'm not sure how that really work in the business world, or is there any...
When you're in certain circumstances, you have to do what you have to do. You have to assess the environment, and then you have to act accordingly to maintain your job. There's a way that we're maintaining our physical, mental being in this world, and you might find yourself in certain circumstances where you have to zig and sometimes zag. If you get thrown in prison, there's certain ways you have to act. If you get thrown in, in a company somewhere, you'll have to act in a certain way to go along with the decorum and understanding how to do that in a dutiful way. Fill out your paperwork, hand it in. It can be done. I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a high court judge. There were others, Ramananda Roy, who was a governor. Obviously, he wasn't not doing his duty and stepping forward when he had to be. Humility doesn't always mean to be meek and humble, but what it really means is to not put oneself as the center. But when you're in a situation, a work situation, where you have to present your work and you have to show it, you do it out of a sense of obligation or duty. You do your duty, what has to be done to perform that kind of work. This is called vyavaharika. It means you have a portion of your life that's dependent on doing the necessary thing. But you can also do it without a sense of I, me, and mine. You just do what has to be done. You had a point, Sunny?
You were mentioning that cooperation is based on the trust. So in that context, the trust and beliefs, is that the same or is anything different?
Is trust and belief the same thing?
Yes. Is it or is it different?
It depends on how you're defining the two. But it's more semantics. The idea of trust is that you develop a relationship with a person over time and you have a strong feeling that they're good for their word, that they have integrity. They're going to do what they say they're going to do. So in a sense, you believe them when they say something. And it's the most valuable asset that we have, our integrity. Our integrity with other Vaishnavas, our reputation, very important. That is the reputation for being trustworthy and honest, and we don't have to be perfect, and we don't have to try to imitate a perfect person if we're not, but we should be straightforward and honest. And if you're working with people that are straightforward and honest, and you come to understand that that's how they operate, then you tend to trust them, and the cooperation becomes easier. A few more points. If at least one person in the team has the deep desire to cooperate in order to please Krishna, that attitude is the starting point towards success. I like that point because if you're in a group and you set the example by not trying to take the credit, by trying to assist others, then it tends to encourage other people to do that also. That spirit of selfless service and humility in working for Krishna. And again, humility doesn't just mean being meek and humble. It means putting Krishna in the center. So Srila Prabhupada asked this question in the Bhagavad Gita, was Arjuna being humble when he went to fight the battle of Kurukshetra? And the answer is yes, amazingly. Some people might say, well, that's not very humble. How could he be humble and go out and fight and, you know, make battle cries and shoot arrows and, you know, develop that kind of, you know, aggressive feeling towards the other side? And the reason is because he was doing it for Krishna. He wasn't doing it for himself. So whatever we do when we're putting Krishna in the center and taking ourselves out of the center, this is humility. And however that manifests externally, it can't be judged by the exact external manifestation. It can only be judged by the motive that's behind it. Yes, Srivas Pandaprabhu.
And to just compliment that, Lord Bhishmadev shot arrows at the Lord. Externally, it may seem that he was really fighting against the Lord very with all the vigor, but actually he was pleasing the Lord in that process.
Nice.
And Bhagavatam says that Lord felt his arrows like flowers.
Yeah, it augments the point that you can't tell from the external activity, right? Because someone would say, he did what? But it was pleasing to Krishna. Yes, thank you. The cycle of cooperation, dependence, independence, interdependence. This is usually seen in the lives of some devotee kids who are raised in Krishna consciousness since birth. Just that there's a way in which, because sometimes I'm in a dependent situation and I'm cooperating only because I have to. And then, because living entities have free will, oftentimes they look at the situation and they say, wait a minute, I don't have to do this. And then they separate themselves from the situation because they can at some point. And kids do this a lot. They go through life, they're dependent on their parents, and they do what they have to do. And then when little Jiva gets a look and says, wait a minute, I could do whatever I want. He says, maybe I will. Who can stop me? Right? Then they become independent. And this, I'm just giving kids as an example, but it couldn't be anybody. And then when someone decides on their own free will, I'm going to go back and do it because I want to do it, there's no power in the universe that can stop that. It's extremely powerful. When someone decides that I'm going to do something, I made this quote the other day, just thinking this determination that I'm going to do it no matter what because I want to. I'm using my free will to do this service because this is what I've decided I'm going to do. It's the right thing. I've clearly understood it, and now I'm doing it. And if someone has that kind of determination, they can't be stopped. In fact, in the manual for war fighting by the U.S. Marine Corps, which I read a couple of times, it's very interesting. The manual is called War Fighting, and it was written by a 5-star general in the U.S. Marine Corps. Sort of a manual that describes what war is and why wars are won and why wars are lost. And he makes some interesting comments in there, but it's not the superior firepower that wins a war. It's the will of the leader. And the leader engenders in the hearts of all the followers the same kind of will to win that wins. Because, I mean, we've seen it in history many times. The stronger army doesn't always win. But if somebody has decided, I'm going to do or die, they win in the end. If the other side thinks, you know, I'd rather be back in California. Why do I have to be here in Vietnam? You know, I didn't sign on for this. I was drafted. This is what happened in the Vietnam War. There was a lack of will. They were sending kids over there who didn't want to go. How are they going to fight against somebody in their own homeland who's decided, okay, I'll just die for this? You can't beat that. It's impossible. So when somebody has this will to succeed, and they've decided, it's definitive that I'm going to do this no matter what happens, then you can't stop them. And so when somebody enters an organization like this, a volunteer organization, and their motive is clear, and they say, I'm going to serve no matter what happens, no matter what the circumstances, no matter what anybody else says to me, I'm serving. I'm doing my service here, because they understand that there may be discord and there may be obstacles to overcome, but come what may, I'm going to do it. Then this brings power to the organization. This is very much what runs a volunteer organization. What else do we have? We're not paying anybody. Prabhupada used to point this out all the time. he had all these disciples running all over the world. He would say, for instance, he told, there's somebody challenged him at a Pandal program and said, you know, if you guys are so great, why don't you go to Pakistan and preach? So Prabhupada didn't, you know, said, all right, we'll go. And he called Brahmananda, who was down in South Africa or something like that. Brahmananda, go to Pakistan. So Brahmananda didn't, he just dropped the phone, packed his bag, and took off. Before Prabhupada could change his mind, which he did, to bring him back. He was already in Pakistan. I mean, en route. There were no cell phones, no internet, nothing. So, you know, he couldn't be called back. So he already, it was fail-safe. He had already gone there. And of course, there was, you know the story, there was some article in the paper about some Americans had been captured and killed. And it sounded exactly like, you know, it was Brahmananda and whoever else, Gargamuni went there, I think, with him. And Prabhupada thought they had been killed there. But the point was that at any given time, if Prabhupada just said, do this, devotees would go and do it. Okay. And that sort of cooperation based on absolute conviction that this is what I'm going to do is very effective. In fact, Prabhupada used to make statements that if everyone would just completely cooperate, we could spread Krishna consciousness all over the world in 25 days. Okay, next things, I'm bringing up a few principles from Kalakanta Prabhu. He raised these in his lecture in Mayapur, which was a shot heard around the world. Such a wonderful devotee. In fact, recently I saw an e-book that he had produced as a glorification of Srila Prabhupada for his Vyasa Puja, and he had written some poetry. He's a poet. He's put into poetical verse, the first canto of the Bhagavatam and some other books as well. It's very nice to read. And Kalakanta Prabhu was, he's a very advanced devotee. In that poetry I was reading, he was saying that, Prabhupada, I could have, it was in poetical verse, so I can't reproduce it completely, I only saw it once, but he said, you know, I could have been a PhD, I could have been a statesman speaking on behalf of the government, some of them, but I took all those things and I laid them at your lotus feet. And he was saying, and I have no regrets. And I was thinking, if someone else said that, I might think, well, maybe you might have got a PhD, or maybe you might have been able to speak on behalf of the government, or even been the king. And I thought, but in Kalakanta's case, it's true. He has that kind of acumen for all kinds of things that he could actually attain those things, and he laid them at the feet of his spiritual master. So he's developed a project in Gainesville, Florida, which has become an example for devotees all over the world. And in fact, I know Kalakanta travels to various places to show others how to set up a program like he has to facilitate and cultivate new people to join Krishna consciousness, especially students, and very particularly Western students. He makes an environment so that they feel comfortable and they want to join and so forth. So, with that preamble, he gave a lecture in Mayapur earlier this year, and it was very well received by everyone. And at that time, Mayapur was full of leaders from all over the world, and everyone felt that it was a coup d'etat. His presentation was astounding. And here are a few of the points that he made about how he's had the success that he's had in Gainesville, Florida. He said, first and foremost, amanina amanadena. Look for the better qualities in others and appreciate those qualities. So when you meet somebody in the art of cooperation, look for the common point. Look for the point that actually connects you to the person. And what connects you really? It's what you can appreciate about the person. So if you can find a quality in someone that's greater than a quality that you have and then appreciate it, this makes a cooperative bond between you and that person. So he teaches this. Look for the good in others. Look for the good qualities in others that you're working with and appreciate them. And as we've talked about in other classes, this appreciation is a very powerful force in and of itself because it opens your heart. and you're able to take, you're able to actually imbibe the good qualities of others when you appreciate them. And it's just the opposite when you're envious. If you see a good quality in someone and you think, why should they have it? Why shouldn't I have it? Why are they so expert? Why aren't I that expert? And then the envy comes in and you think, you know, I wish they would fail so I would look better. This is the essence of envy. It's the inability to tolerate the eminence of another. And so that closes the heart. And whatever good qualities the person has bounces off me, like I have a force field around me. And their good qualities just bounce off and I never get them. But appreciation, which takes a little exercise, it's a muscle. You have to exercise that muscle of appreciation. The mind is going, don't do it. Like, why? You know, just like with exercise. You know, every day you have to exercise, especially when you get older. And the mind is saying, you know, well, just skip today. You know, why do you have to exercise? You know, no, do it. You have to exercise. After you feel great. But beforehand, no, don't do it. So this muscle of appreciation, you have to exercise every day and say, yeah, use it. The more you use that appreciation muscle, the more it gets strong. And you learn that this is how I grow in life. Actually, I learned to have gratitude and appreciate others. This Amanina Manadena was taught by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Durdaivam Idrishami Hajani Nanuragaha, I don't have any taste for chanting Hare Krishna. What do I do? Mahaprabhu answers, Amanina Manadena. Start appreciating that other people have it. You don't have it? Appreciate other people who do have it. And don't fall into the trap of thinking like, well, if I don't have it, nobody could have it. They're probably faking. This is envy. If I can't do it, they're probably faking it. They're probably really not doing it for real, or they're just doing it for show. Don't think like that. Otherwise, you block your ability to actually take on the good qualities of others. So manina manadena, look for the good qualities. Actually search for them. And then appreciate them. Appreciate those qualities. I saw a couple of years ago, there was one devotee who was finding devotees, godbrothers to appreciate, and he was writing articles about them in Dandavats. I found it very refreshing. And even just reading an article of appreciation for another devotee is so unusual these days, rather than nitpicking what they did wrong, but finding what they're doing right and actually appreciating it in a public forum in writing, which takes some consideration and time, and you really have to put yourself out and say, I appreciate this person, I'm putting my stamp on it. Just reading it, it opened my heart too. So this appreciation principle is very powerful, and you can exercise it. So there's an example that in the Mahabharata, Duryodhan, when he was given a task to go out and find somebody that was better than him by Dronacharya. Dronacharya said, you go out and find somebody better than you. So he went out and he searched the whole world and he came back and he said, I can't find anybody better than me. And then it was Yudhishthira. He told Yudhishthira, you go out and find somebody that's lower than you, that has less qualification. And he came back and he said, I can't find anybody lower than me. And Dronacharya said, you're fit to be king. You're fit to be a ruler. So a leader should think like that. In fact, this is the qualification of a guru. Guru doesn't think, I'm guru. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta goes into this quite a bit and talks about how guru thinks, I'm servant of everybody. Whatever capacity somebody's leading others, should actually respect them and think that I'm serving them, they're teaching me. And he comments on this, that although Srila Gaurakishor Das Babaji Maharaj gave him several instructions, among them were, don't take any disciples, and don't move out of the Dham. And so he went and started a big temple in Calcutta, and he had thousands of disciples. So what was his explanation? They're not my disciples. I am their servant. They're representatives of my spiritual master. It's the mentality behind it. And this is a necessary mentality for cooperation. Again, it's ego effacing that I'm stepping out of the center and I'm seeing everyone as my teacher. Everyone is a representative of Krishna. And Amanina Manadena. Then he gave the next principle, did Kalakanta Prabhu, and that is Yena Tena Prakarina Krishnamana Divyeshayat. Rupa Goswami gives this also. This is important to keep in mind for a movement such as ours where we have a mission. Our mission is to grow. We want to grow. We want to actually bring more people in to cooperate with each other. And that's what a community like ours is. It's a group of people who have decided to cooperate amongst each other, with each other. If you get a community and people aren't cooperating, you have hell. But if you have a semblance of cooperation, then you have Vaikuntha. It's very nice. So the principle in doing that, you have to have a central principle, and that is Yena Tena Prakarena Krishnamana Naveshayat. One way or another, remember Krishna. And this is the first principle. When people come to Krishna consciousness, we should not impose rules and regulations, but we should see to it that we create an environment that they can remember Krishna. All accommodating. It means all accommodating. We're making all accommodations to people. We're not envious of new people. This is possible. Some new person can come and we're envious because we think, we've got the rules and regulations. You don't know what you're doing here. And they will feel alienated. And that can be manifest to one degree or another. It can be a very subtle thing. In fact, there's a way in which we should be thinking how to accommodate people when they come to ISV. In every single way. And in other words, if someone comes here and they don't feel like, they know what we're doing and we don't care. That someone might come and we're singing one thing and they're standing in the corner and they don't know what it is, and we don't accommodate them. We don't go out of our way to accommodate them. It's a kind of envy. It's like, well, who cares for them? We're not cooperating. We're not opening ourselves up. We're not widening the circle. We're not even aware of it. So, and also people might have come from a culture that has slightly different rules. Who cares about the rules? That's what this verse says. Yena tena prakarena krishna mana nivesha is one rule. And we know what that is, right? Actually, there's two rules. The first one is ark. Ark, ark, ark. Always remember Krishna. Everyone say ark, ark. Yeah, ark, ark. So ark, ark means always remember Krishna, always remember Krishna, and never forget Krishna. And Prabhupada operated on these. I heard something astounding the other day. One devotee was telling a story here about Jamuna. Who was telling that? He was telling about Jamuna coming to cook? Pratibha. Pratibha Mataji was telling the story about how Jamuna first came to learn to cook from Prabhupada. And she was in the kitchen with Prabhupada. She said, can I go outside to smoke a cigarette? He said, okay, go ahead and come back, then wash your hands. Then she, can I get a drink of water? Yes, go out, get a drink of water, come back, wash your hands. I mean, what's wrong with this picture? Someone might say, you're smoking a cigarette, you can't be in the kitchen. Of course, there are some rules and regulations. Prabhupada assessed the environment of America. He saw that people have no sense of things, and he kept the door open so that they could continue to remember Krishna. This is cooperation. We're cooperating with them, and we're accommodating them. This is a kind of cooperation, accommodation, that we understand that this person has a certain need. The Vedas are very accommodating. In fact, the Vedas say, you can eat meat. What? For people who are shocked. Well, how is that? Because they're cooperating with the fact that living entities have fallen into a low state, and therefore they need some accommodation. Therefore, in the Vedas, there's a provision. You can eat meat. You have to do it on a dark moon night. You have to say a mantra to the goat you're about to kill, saying, you get to kill me next, and so forth. There is an accommodation for this. And this idea is that we should open the door for everyone, allow them to come in. So this idea is that, first of all, think about Krishna, the rules and regulations come later. First of all, remember Krishna. Later come. First of all. Second of all. Later. Later, let them come. Because Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. Janaya Yashuvairagyam Jnanam Chayarahitukam. If someone does devotional service, naturally they get knowledge and detachment from the world. Yasyasti Bhaktir Bhagavatiya Kinshana Sarvergunas Tatra Samasate Sura. Harava Bhaktasuku Tova Muhadguna Manoritenasati Davatobahi. If someone performs devotional service, he or she naturally develops all the good qualities of the devas. So we want to engage people. And the third point he makes is Anandamayo Bhyasat. That is, everyone's searching for bliss, happiness. That's what they want. They don't want rules and regulations. They want happiness. They want bliss. And that comes in the form of love. Everyone wants to be loved. So if you extend your love to people who come in these doors, they'll feel it. That's one thing all living entities feel. They can sense it, even in lower life forms. If you extend kindness to living entities who are not in a human body, they respond, don't they? I was walking in Dog Loka today, which is where I live. Well, you don't know I live in Dog Loka, right? That's otherwise, a.k.a. Burlingame, California. It's also known as Dog Loka. Everyone has to have a dog there. I haven't turned in my registration for a dog yet, so I guess I don't have one. But whenever I go walking, I notice everyone has dogs, and I was watching this morning people admiring each other's dogs and how much the dogs respond. A living entity in a dog's body knows when people are giving attention and love and so forth, and you know they cry for it, actually. And all living entities are like that. So this is a universal principle. If you extend your love and compassion to people, then they will respond in remarkable ways. And that's what our organization is meant to do. We're followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's what he did. Everywhere he went, he extended his heart to people. And he brought them closer to Krishna by giving them the opportunity to feel that love and compassion that he was distributing liberally everywhere he went. So these three principles, amanina amanadina, look for the better quality in others and appreciate it. Yena tena prakarena, first of all, think of Krishna. Let the rules and regulations come second. And third, anandamayo bhyasat. Understand that what people are really looking for is love. And if you extend that to people, they'll overlook all the faults. They'll overlook all the cultural differences. Everything they will overlook if they experience that love, which is real ananda. Now we'll take some reflections. Yes, Vittal Prabhu.
Prabhuji, it was a question actually. You talked about how we should be accommodating because of the diverse background, right? But do you feel it can, in a bid to try to accommodate, there is a risk of us losing our core values, our core rules? Because, yes, you did quote that shloka of Rupa Goswami, like somehow or other we need to actually first develop love or devotion for Krishna, and the rules are secondary. But do you think that can actually make us like mundane sahajiyas? Is that risk possible? How, if at all, because I totally understand the point about being accommodative, but how do we draw the line?
Well, you have to know where you're going. You have to have your goal and keep it in mind. If you have that, then you'll actually feel more liberal to accommodate people, because you'll have a very strong sense of who you are and what your values are. People who actually are very sure of themselves and what their values are and where they're going, what their goals are, can accommodate others and be liberal. It's people who don't have high self-esteem because they don't have integrity, they don't exactly know who they are. Neophytes, actually Kanishtas. Kanishtas are not preachers in any organization. There's, to explain, in the Shastra, there are these three levels of of advancement mentioned of devotees. In any practice, this is true. Kanishna Madhyam Uttam, which just means the lowest, middle, and then highest. And there are categories within categories in all of those. But these three general categories, Kanishta is mentioned in the Shastra, Acharyameva Hariye Pujamya Shariye Hate Natad Bhakteshu Chanyeshu Sabhakta Prakrita Smritaha. The lowest devotee is the one who only sees Krishna in the temple, but cannot recognize devotees, and also has no regard for other living entities, and doesn't know how to treat them. And Kanishtas, therefore, can't accommodate others. They can't preach to others. And their faith is very weak also. And because their faith is weak, they're afraid to extend themselves and take chances with other people because they feel that I'll lose what I have. And because they're not sure of themselves. Madhyama Adhikaris, on the other hand, are preachers. They do take risks for Krishna because their faith is very strong. They're very sure of themselves. They're very sure that they are eternal servants of Krishna. They're very sure of their value system in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, they can afford to extend themselves to others who are not of their kin, who have slightly different ways of thinking about things and doing things, because they don't feel like they're going to lose anything. And therefore, but within the Madhyamadikari category, Ishvare taradineshu bali sheshu dvisatsucha prema maitri kripopeksha yakaroti samadhyamaha. Havi Yogendra explains that the preacher makes discrimination. It's not that we're indiscriminate. He's clear about what the goal is, and therefore he discriminates amongst those he's teaching. And if somebody's envious, he doesn't accommodate him. If he detects that there's an envy within a person, that they're not interested in your organization, they're not interested in your mood or your mission, it's not that he foolheartedly accommodates such a person. But if the person is innocent and open, then he does everything he can to accommodate that person, to make sure that he can get some traction. And there are 20 qualities of devotees listed. And among those are humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, and so many other things. And then there's devotion to Krishna. Now, Rupa Goswami says, if a person's lacking 19 qualities, but he has one quality, and that is that he has some devotion for Krishna, he said, you have to accept him as a devotee. Krishna says the same thing in essence. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananya bhak. Sadureva samantabhya samyag vyavasito hi saha. That if somebody shows loose character, but if they have that one quality that they're determined, they want to be Krishna conscious, even though right now they can't quite do that, you have to consider them a sadhu. And if you reject them, it's an offense, actually. And therefore, in summary, you should be very clear about the goal, and preachers can see that there's magic happening. There's magic happening. We're not in any danger. If we stick to the process given to us by our spiritual master in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we're not in any danger at all. We will be protected under all circumstances. The only danger is if we deviate from that. If we keep the essence of that and we understand it and we're practicing it ourselves, we are liberal in how we extend it to other people. A person who's healthy and fortified, already inoculated from the disease that's going on in the world, then may go out and feel free to save other people and take all kinds of risks. But it's a fair point, and it's a good question that we have to analyze. What is our motive for accommodating people? And maybe making an environment that they can appreciate. Are we doing it to avoid Krishna? Like once Rabindra Sarup Prabhu, I heard he was talking about how for many years he was discussing with many people. Sometimes people say, well, you know, people aren't so much attracted to all this Krishna stuff. So then devotees for a long time, they're discussing different ways to present Krishna consciousness without putting Krishna in it, which is a really tough thing to do. And then he said, you know, after talking about it for years, different people, different conversations, he decided, we'll just leave Krishna in. So a straightforward presentation of Krishna consciousness, but at the same time, accommodating that person's particular situation is an art. It's an art. And that's the art of the Madhyama Adhikari. It's an advanced devotee. And when one has faith and can take risks, then Krishna gives intelligence how to do it. And sometimes those by Kanishta Adhikaris, those are seen as very dangerous things. When Prabhupada came to America, and he was taking risks all over the place, according to all the people back in India, or, you know, other preachers and godbrothers that he had known who were Kanishta Adhikaris. They were inflexible. They saw Prabhupada bringing the Westerners into Krishna consciousness. And all they could see is, like, they're dancing together, men and women in the same room. How can you do that? Because they were used to living in a, you know, in a monastery. And they're like, what are they doing together? But they had no way of understanding what was going on in San Francisco in 1967. Practically nobody could understand what was going on in 1967 in San Francisco. I mean, it was a revolution of consciousness. People were drop out. What is it? Drop out, tune in. No, wait. Tune in. If Keshav Bharti Maharaj is here, he could tell me. I should know this stuff from the 60s. I forgot. There were all kinds of slogans that had to do with, you know, drop out of society and tune into the inner consciousness and so many things. And it was a romantic era, a rebirth of a romantic era, which means that anything goes. We're going for the inner life, and we don't care about rules and regulations anyway. And it's remarkable that Prabhupada was able to walk that line of introducing Krishna consciousness in such an era where people were saying, forget the rules and regulations, we're tired of the status quo, we want to do our own thing. Do your thing. You'll be king. Dogs run free, why can't we? I remember that from a song. So all this was going on, and meanwhile, Prabhupada, well, Shama Sundar was carving Lord Jagannath. He wasn't initiated yet, obviously, but Prabhupada had given him service to carve Lord Jagannath, the first Lord Jagannath that we had in the movement. He was there up on the top of the roof when Prabhupada came to see the progress. There was a package of cigarettes on Jagannath's head. Did Prabhupada say, okay, you're out, go home, leave, we never want to see you again? He flicked it off, and it went flying across the rooftop. And then he told Shama Sundar, you smoke one less every day. Very nasty habit, smoke one less every day. And where did the first little Jagannath come from? From Cost Plus, but he was stolen, I have to tell you. The devotee, you know, went in there and was, you know, anyway, she picked him up and just took him because she figured, you know, it was in the 1967 and, you know, you don't pay for stuff. I mean, that was the environment. It would prop a... knew what was going on, all these things. Yeah, just but buy the next ones, you know. He didn't just block everybody out and say, it has to be like this, it has to be like that. This kind of rules and regulations is a niyamagraha, following the rules and regulations but not seeing actually how they're affecting people or what they're for, actually, or when they should be applied properly. It takes intelligence. It takes at least Madhyama Adhikari. That's why Madhyama Adhikaris are the preachers. And those who preach become Madhyama Adhikaris also. That's why we emphasize this here. We emphasize going out and doing all kinds of activities to bring people in, because when you do, you have to interact and you have to learn how to adjust your value system and extend it to others. If you really want to save somebody, you have to learn how to, you know, take your coat off and jump in the water and get a little wet, and to, you know, to actually bring people in to do the life saving. And in the process, you grow, you become stronger, and you also learn that by taking those kinds of risks, you know, Krishna actually appreciates it. I mean, he's the one who says, "Go out and do this." He's the one who says, "Anyone who teaches this becomes the most dear to me," and so forth. But we have, you know, there, it has happened that due to a kind of a sentiment, a material sentiment, that someone will begin to take away the presentation from the presentation of Krishna consciousness in such a way that they start sympathizing with the people who they're preaching to and thinking, well, maybe this is better than what we have, something like that. Yes. Reflections. Better ask Ramananda Prabhu why that fancy new digital isn't working.
We had gone to a person's house yesterday because they were having a puja there. It was a gathering that they were doing bhajans. And we were hoping we could do some bhagavatams there. So I dragged my husband with me. I said, come on, we'll go and try it. And we went in. And I realized that the group had already knew us because the Prabhu was like, you people. And he pointed to the tilak. And he said, you guys, I know you. You're the Krishna people, right? And, you know, I know a friend who's gone off with you guys. She used to be with us. She's not with us anymore. But they were very friendly and they talked to us. And I could feel that, you know, by the end of that session of talking to everybody, we realized we were not going to do any bhagavatams here because we first had to change their attitude to us before they would even listen to us. I felt that subtle wave as if, you know, you guys are here to search for more. Haven't we lost enough people to? I mean, we get it, you know. Oh, Bhagavad Gita, yeah, we all have it. We're good, you know. And when I went in, I was telling my husband, I wanted to remember what Guru Maharaj said that, you know, if you want to do book distribution, go get 10 no's and you've succeeded. You don't have to get even one yes to go do a book. So at the end of the day, when we came back, two or three instances talking to people, they were very, I don't know how to call that, they were very, so what are you going to sell to me kind of attitude. But towards the end of the day, I felt that it was really a good visit for a simple reason that when they think back on us, they'll think they're not that bad. They're okay. They liked us. You know, they like what we do, and they appreciated us. And sometimes that is more important. Is that more important than even doing a Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita?
Well, you do what you can. We're not going out there just to sell a Bhagavatam set, but to interact with people. And yes, I mean, you do what you can with what you have and whomever you meet. It's not that, you know, if someone doesn't meet a certain expectation, then we just, oh. We're dealing with living entities, and Krishna's in their heart. And everything counts. Everything counts. Actually, everything counts in all our relationships. But when we're going out to teach Krishna consciousness to other people, every word we say and every move we make is noticed. They notice it very acutely, more than we can imagine. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta used to tell his sannyasis in the mutt, he would say, go out every day and knock at least 4 doors and speak Harikatha. He said, even if they're not interested, and they close the door, then they at least they'll think, here's these people came, and it'll stick in their consciousness. And how many times? We can't even count how many times over the years. I can't count how many times we've had reversals. Now, in wrestling, anybody knows wrestling a little bit, there's a thing called a reversal. It means you're down, they've got you in a hold, and then somehow or other you get out of it and you get them in a hold. It's called a reversal. It's worth more points than anything else when you're wrestling. So when distributing books and Krishna consciousness, oftentimes there's these reversals where someone's, no, no, I know everything. I'm not interested in this. You go away. You're bad. This, that. And then 5 minutes later, 10 minutes later, 5 days later, whatever it is, they change their mind. What happened there? How can you explain that? So don't count out the reversals. And also keep in mind that whatever impression you leave somebody is very, it's indelible. You know, it was an extraordinary experience, you coming to their door. They weren't expecting it. And they'll remember that for years and years and years. And they'll remember how they reacted to you. So many times, like Jagai Madai, for instance, in the pastimes of the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they reacted violently towards Lord Nityananda and Haridas Thakur, who were out trying to just give them the holy name. And after they were converted and they became Vaishnavas, it was Madai, who had thrown the pot at Nityananda Prabhu, and he was lamenting like anything, crying all the time, thinking, how could I have done that? So, I mean, you don't know what's going to happen when you're going out and presenting. So this way we always say, do your best to leave a good impression with everybody that you meet. And yes, it does count for a lot. And it's a process, it's not an event. Yes.
I just wanted to share a very nice experience because we are talking about books. Just today morning, somehow the thought came to my mind. There's a very beautiful temple, Sanatan Mandir, in San Bruno. It's, you know, by the Fiji Indians, and there are very beautiful deities of Lord Ram, Lakshman, Hanuman, Sita. And I thought I'll take, you know, the kids there. There was a kids' class going on over there in Hindi, and they were trying to teach similar to what we have here. And I was very impressed because I was not aware of it before. And it so happened one thing led to the other, and the person who was leading that class, he shared with me that one of the assignments they had last month was go on a field trip to the LA, to the San Francisco Rath Yatra. And then he said, he was trying to, when I shared with him that, you know, I'm part of the congregation here in ISKCON Mountain View and ISKCON of Silicon Valley, and he was very impressed, and he said, in fact, we have asked the kids to write their experience at the Rath Yatra, and there are gifts for and prizes for that. And the prizes were the Bhagavad Gita as it is. So I was very blessed by that, you know, unexpected experience that he gave me, and everyone was very, all the, I would say the management and as well as, you know, the devotees who are managing the temple, very humble and service, a lot of service attitude. I was very grateful for that experience.
Very powerful for story. Dilip Bhai? Thank you, Rishesh.
There's a story behind that. Every Tuesday they have Ramkatha. It just happened that it was a Tuesday and I went there. And I was sitting there all, he was doing it Hindi and they were singing some bhajans, all one. So I met this devotee and they wanted to go to Rath Yatra. I said, you know, a long time ago I used to come to this temple before we had this ISKCON. He said, oh yes? I said, yeah, they used to go to the Rath Yatra. And then they used to have five or six temples, like a yatra, going to various temples. And I asked him, I said, how come you guys don't go? And they said, well, we need a ride and this and that. I said, look, put my name on the website. And we had about 30 people going from that temple to Rath Yatra. And I said, look, I'll arrange the parking for you guys. Just bring all your senior citizens, park it there, and then they can go halfway and walk to the Rath Yatra. Even if you pull the rope, it's going to be worth it. And I said, next time you go to do your Rath Yatra, all the temple, please come to Mountain View. And we have a Hare Krishna temple there, and we will cook the prasadam for you. I'm trying to arrange that for them so they can come at the end and bring them here. There's various temples they go to. Then they started reading the Bhagavad Gita during the week, and they didn't have enough books. So I said, hey, tomorrow I'm going to bring you three cases of books to you. Then I said, I committed myself. I said, look, then I'm going to bring you a guest speaker. As soon as you start, that's where you're going to come in. And I said, we will give you a demonstration how to read Bhagavad Gita, and then you can take it from there. And funny, his name is also Dilip Bhai.
Dilip Bhai, you are a true Madhyama Adhikari.
Yeah. you were saying earlier in the class about openly appreciating. Mm-hmm. And in that context, I want to just share one thing. Like the incident where we actually came to know about our Guru Maharaj in 2003 is through his diary chapter where he had appreciated about Tamal Krishna Maharaj. Mm-hmm. That time, I was pretty new to Krishna consciousness. So in that article, he had glorified Tamal Krishna Maharaj so much. Then I was reading that and I was thinking, can somebody glorify others like in the material world so much? This sounds like completely, you know, outside the box. So that actually made me learn more about him. And that's how we came to know about him.
Wow. That's really amazing. Yeah. Yeah. That deserves it. Yeah, how that appreciation expands, that glorification expands, it actually touches the hearts of others, and we don't see it, but it's palpable, it's very, it's pervasive. Mayapur.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, one question regarding cooperation. Sometimes, even with good intention, there are some points that two devotees or two people may not agree on. Of course, the next steps is to discuss it. But there are scenarios where the differences remain. Of course, from a devotional perspective, both the devotees want to serve Krishna, apparently at least, in the best possible way. So, two things. What should be the next steps? A, if you are the leader, and B, if you are not the leader, but assisting someone in the service?
I don't know of many circumstances where there's not differences of opinion. You said sometimes. I was thinking it's pretty much all the time. Because we are all individuals, and everyone either overtly or covertly have a slightly different way of looking at things. And we have to look for the commonalities. So when you're a leader, you have to orchestrate. In an orchestra, there's many different instruments, and they all have their part to play. And somehow, you have to learn to bring them together and see, yeah, that works with this, this works with that, and see that they can somehow or other keep playing. You have to keep the music going somehow. And encourage people. This is one of the things, you have to encourage people and fan the spark when you see something good. You know, bring it out in them, because then they develop their own impetus and so forth. And then you're saying if you're not a leader.
Let's say, you know, you're helping, I mean, as part of the team, helping. So sometimes everyone has a view, but then does it mean that as a good soldier, you have to just follow it? Because not in every project or every phase, you know, everything is where you decide next year.
Yes, I got it. Well, if you're not in charge and you're not moving the energy, so to speak, you have to set a really good example. Because if you, we say, think globally, work locally. And it goes to this point, when you have a better way of doing something, then show it. Show it in your own, the way that you do it and so forth, to the capacity that you can. And as you do, it'll come out and people will want to export it. They'll want to import it and you'll be able to export it. And you can be in any part of the world with very little facility, but if you show by your determination and your sincere spirit that you have a better way to do things, people will knock or build a pathway to your door to find out what it is. And in a group, in a small group, or whatever it is, you have to learn to set an example in that way. Because in volunteer organizations, or for that matter, in any organization, because even as a paid organization, there's still working this dynamic of the human spirit. You have to learn how to actually engender trust and encourage people, whether you're on top or whether you're actually in the organization. And then there can be some good outcome. If you demand it, or if you try to legislate it, it may last for some time. Like despots in tyrannical governments will impose all kinds of laws on people and say you have to do like this and have to do it like that, eventually the walls will break down and the people will revolt, because we're free spirits. We're all parts and parcel of God. He's the supreme free spirit, and we're little samples of that. So one way or another, you have to accommodate that spirit. It can't be legislated necessarily. Thank you very much, everyone, for coming here today for the Sunday ISKCON of Silicon Valley Love Feast. Hare Krishna. And we're going to now... Yeah. Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, hey, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman, Nachari Armarman.